If you are emotionally invested in this Mets team and you're sad right now, it's certainly understandable. But I promise you that won't take long to wear off if it ends here, because once the immediate disappointment, if they don't pull off some kind of magical comeback here, wears off, you'll realize what an incredible ride this team took you for this year. It started out 0-5. They showed some signs of life before they fell to 11 games under the 500 mark. And a lot of people had them written off right there. And so when you're lying around during the offseason anticipating the next one, and you think about what the 2024 Mets were all about, you won't be able to keep yourself from smiling. Remember the talk over the winter, transitional year, they're punting on the season? Well, they've kicked all the way to the sixth game of the National League Championship Series. And I'll say this on a personal level. I was 15 years old when they won the 1969 World Series. That's 55 years ago. So you can do the math for yourself. But I'll just say this about the 2024 New York Mets. This 70-year-old feel 15 all over again. You can watch baseball for a lot of years and never see the run that the Mets went on during this postseason, and even the days prior.
Not going to the World Series, of course, but nobody in the baseball community wasn't impressed by what these guys did this year.
Well, I tell you what, look, we've all been on that end of the losing end, and it's how difficult it is to sit there and stand in front of your locker and answer those questions because you're disappointed. But what the Mets were able to accomplish this year, there's a new level of excitement with that organization. The fans have been re-energized. You have a potential star being born in Vientos. Lindor is playing better than he's played in a long, long time. You got Stevie Cohen, the owner. You got David Stearns, who's one of the best in the business. The New York Mets have a lot to look forward to moving forward. And, this could just be the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, you said it best. I mean, from top to bottom, I mean, look, this is a big, big success for the New York Mets. They were out of it in June. Nobody thought they would be here. But they have Alex and Steve Cohen at the ownership. David Stearns, who has a small market mentality with deep pockets, is a hell of a combination. You have the right manager, Mendoza, Lindor. And here's the thing. What they have building looks a lot like what the Dodgers have been doing. You have David Stearns, which looks a lot like Andrew Friedman, and Mark Walters looks a lot like Steve Cohen. If you're the Mets and they were a stock, I would buy as much as I can right now.
Yesterday at the airport, a lifetime Mets fan told me that it doesn't matter what the result is today, they were happy and proud of what the Mets has accomplished. And that says a lot about the organization. They are not too far away from facing a World Series.
I mean, there's so much for us to be proud of, what we've overcame, how we became like brothers. I mean, we were just like, we accepted everyone for who they were. We came together, we gelled, we overcame so much adversity. The amount of fight, the high character, and like just the collectiveness of the group, it's really special. I mean, this is no doubt a really special team. It's unfortunate that we came up short, but I mean, again, that's a really good team over there, and we're a good team, but over the course of the series, like they earned it.
Special. I don't think anybody expected us to be here, and that was one of the coolest, most magical runs I've ever been a part of. So just happy to be a little part of this team.
This should be our expectations moving forward every year, that should be playing games deep into October. But again, proud of the whole organization.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Monday, October 21st, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, TalkingMets No G. And don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Well, it's never easy the morning after the baseball season ends, no matter what context the baseball season ends. And I come to you here this early Monday morning, sun just about coming up here in New York. And it literally was just a few hours ago that I got off the Twitter spaces with our good friend Anthony Rivera, Subway Shea. What a ride. And you heard from Howie Rose. You heard from all those bozos in the Fox booth. You heard from Pete Alonso. You heard from Sean Manaea. And then you heard one of the most impactful comments from Carlos Mendoza there at the end. A little bit of a longer intro to kind of set up a melancholy show, but a show that I think will put a little bow on 2024. Hopefully you'll agree with that. I always go back to, and a couple of years ago, for those who've been listening a long time, after the 2022 season that ended way too short, way too quickly, I always go back to that Bart Giamatti quote, how he talks about how baseball's designed to break your heart, how it begins with all the hope of a season in the spring, the warm weather, how it blossoms in the summer where we're off, some of you, and having fun, and night in and night out, listening to Gary, Keith, Ron, Howie, the ups and the downs, listening to this show, other shows, interacting and collaborating on X or Facebook or whatever social media site that you frequent. And it's like one big family. Even though you don't know these guys, you don't know Mark Vientos, you don't know Howie. Heck, you and I don't know each other, all of you. But we feel like we know each other because we're all connecting and discussing over something that we care about, that we're having fun doing. And then within a snap, and it's usually the fall when the weather gets a little chilly and it's a little bit more rainy and obviously it gets dark really early, you feel like those first few months of fall into winter, it feels like your whole life is in the dark because it gets dark so early. And you're left without it. And I think tonight, after you come home, you go to work and you settle in, and you really wish, as well as I do, you were settling into a game seven, it's going to hit you. Well, that's it. The baseball season's over. And for a lot of you, there are other things. There's football, and I know that the Jets and Giants are a tough watch right now. There's the NHL. There's the NBA. There's college hoops. There's college football. There's other non-sports things in your life that you enjoy, hobbies and things like that. And that's all good, but this is an important part of what you do. This is something that you gather around. And what I've really learned as I've done the Twitter spaces, and I always knew this, but it gets crystallized more and more as you talk to people live, is how this whole hobby, if done in a healthy format, could be a great outlet to meet like-minded people and develop friendships, even if you never physically meet anybody in person. That I know, because I've met people that I would have no opportunity of meeting if not for the Mets, that last a lifetime. And I think, yes, it's coming across, obviously, a rationalization. And this hurts. And I told you guys, once they beat Philadelphia, this hurts. I don't know if it would have hurt as much if they didn't beat Philadelphia. They didn't put out there that they want to win a championship. I don't think this would have hurt as much if they had went into Milwaukee and Pete Alonso never hit that home run. It would have stung, but it wouldn't have hurt, because you had seen where this team was, the unlikeliness, how unlikely it was to come back from 11 under, handle the challenges with injuries, maybe some of the shortcomings of the roster, the ups and the downs and things like that. But this hurts, and here I am rationalizing it. But I think it's really important to put it in context, because truly, if you start to look at this sport, it always was a sport that was designed to break your heart. It was always a sport that was tough to win a championship. Yeah, you have the Yankees and the Cardinals and some of these teams that have won a ton, specifically the Yankees, who are going for the 28th World Championship. But if you look at the Yankees and the majority of those titles, they were won in a much different era, much different league. And let's face it now, with the way that the wild card is, with the multiple wild cards and the multiple rounds. This is really, really tough. This is really, really tough to win in this sport. It's not just about winning one game if you're a wild card play-in. It's about winning 2 out of 3 and so on and so forth. So it's okay to be sad today, and I'm sure you're going to feel that emptiness and loss. And I know in talking to our friend Anthony Rivera, somebody Shea, during the Twitter spaces last night, he wasn't in the mood to hear any of this stuff. And hopefully, and I think Anthony's opinion is shared by a lot of you, maybe a majority of you. But hopefully as the day goes on and then you get home and you start to have the hurt wear off, you'll really look at how this truly is, if the Mets leverage it appropriately, this truly is the innocent climb that we've been waiting for with this organization for a long time. And they've had success before. And I could have said this if I was around after the 2015 World Series. I actually started this program opening day 2016. That was when this show was birthed. And it's built over the years. So I wasn't doing any more radio in 2015. I was coming off the ESPN experience. So back then, you could have said the same thing. But I'll tell you what, and you heard a little bit about it in the comments coming in. The presence of Steve Cohen and his family, and particularly his wife who's very involved, makes this a lot different. And it's not just about the money. The money is going to be putting them on equal par with the Dodgers and the Yankees and whoever other big market team decides to spend wildly. The money puts them in the same pantheon. I think what you're seeing is Cohen desperately trying to build an organization that is connecting with every stakeholder that's involved. That's the fans, that's the players' families, building a front office that could be competent and sustainable and find ways to create whatever market inefficiencies are out there. I don't know how many more innovations you could have in baseball, but I'm sure they're looking for it. And I think that's the difference, because when you look at some of the prior runs the Mets have had in the last 25 years, times where you thought, okay, the 80s was over, they had the down period, then the strike happened, and you had the Bobby V years. And those years were so much about Bobby V and Phillips and some of the imported stars that made up that group, because that was a group that it had a couple of homegrown players, but the real stars of that team were all from other teams. They brought them together and they almost won a championship, and they got old quick. And then you had the 06 group, which was supposed to be built around Reyes and Wright. And I think the 06 team, because they were so much fun throughout the year, kind of like this team, but because the expectations were so much higher, and because they had dominated the National League during the regular season, their loss sent this organization into what is nearly a 20-year spiral of negativity, and it's been built up to the point where when Cohen took over, this team was teetering on, I don't want to say becoming the New York baseball version of what the Islanders have been, kind of put into the back, but it was starting to frustrate their longstanding fans. It wasn't a brand that I think younger fans that were coming into the sport would want to be identified with. There was too much chaos, too much drama. And in 4 years, and he said he would love to win a championship within 5 years, and next year's year five. But in 4 years, he's been able to give us here, Mets fans, those who cover the team, a couple of playoff runs, one longer than the other, couple of disappointing seasons, but every season he's invested, every season I think Citi Field has become and been birthed into more of what his vision is. And here you are going into year five. You have one of the best minds in the game in David Stearns. They may have just lucked themselves into their next long-range manager, something they haven't had. They haven't had someone who's been with the organization who you expect to be for 5 or 6 years since Bobby V. I mean, nobody has really been able to. I mean, yeah, Terry Collins was around, but Terry Collins was around largely as a caretaker. And let's face it, if not for, and we talked about this on the Twitter spaces a couple of days ago, if not for Fred Wilpon liking Terry, he should have been long gone way before 2015. He was a lousy manager. He wasn't a manager building an organization. He was a caretaker. And, you know, if maybe Carlos Mendoza will become their Davey Johnson. Maybe Carlos Mendoza will become what I've been asking for a long time. Can the Mets find someone to build with that becomes their Ron Gardenhire, their Tom Kelly, someone who's with the team for a long time and becomes the leader in the fabric of building a culture? And so far, and you heard on the postgame, Gary Cohen thinks very highly of Mendoza. That we've seen the beginnings of that. And the most impactful statement you heard coming in came from Mendoza, where, and that's where you want to put it out there, just like they put it out there and said, you know, we're now winning a championship. Sometimes you got to put your chips to the center of the table. You can't do half measures. And Mendoza said, we expect to be here every October. They, you know, they've gotten the taste. They've had the fun. They've overcome obstacles. They've thrown some long-standing Mets narratives in the trash. But you get one shot at an innocent climb. You have to leverage it. The 06 team, they kind of built that up and had success, and then they threw it in the trash. And the 07 collapse pretty much turned the franchise on its side, and it's still reeling in a lot of ways from it. The 2015 team had this magical ride, and with proper investment, that would have been a very interesting 16, 17, 18, and so on, with all those arms, even though they had injuries with all those arms. They never leveraged those arms. And that's why we're here where we are today, where the Mets are finally climbing out in a lot of ways from mistakes and things that happened well over 10 years ago. And that's the exciting part, the future, what you heard Jeter and A-Rod and Big Poppy talk about, the demand that Mendoza just put out. That's the future. But that's not going to be easy. And you know it and I know it. And I'm not going to get in here on this Monday morning while you're still trying to wipe maybe some of those tears off your eyes and while you're still trying to shake off the icky feeling that you feel waking up knowing that a missed opportunity just in front of you. This organization missed an opportunity. It's not going to be easy to get back to just where they're at here. They had a legitimately good shot if they had gotten into the World Series of winning that. Better than I think they've had in a long time. I thought they had a great shot in 2015, but that was a tough Kansas City team. 2000 would have been, you know, a rematch with the Yankees would have been interesting, and I think the Mets were positioned to be much more able to navigate that series than they did 25 years ago. So, you know, I don't want to get into what needs to happen, but there's a great opportunity, an exciting opportunity. Yeah, you could buy stock in the Mets, that's all those things, but the work is just beginning. And the real challenge is, and I think Pete Alonso said it in his comments, the brotherhood, the vibes, all those things that they came together around. And there's been a debate from the beginning of time in sports. Is it the vibes and the chemistry that lead to winning or vice versa? And a lot of times the winning breeds good chemistry. But I think this team in a lot of ways, because there wasn't winning that brought them together. It was a situation around Memorial Day. We've talked about it over and over and over again where they had to decide what they wanted their New York experience this year to be. And a lot of them could have easily just said, let me just play for myself and I'll be out of here in 6 weeks, 7 weeks. I'll be a mercenary. But every one of them, and give J.D. Martinez credit, and I said this during the postgame Twitter spaces, I don't think J.D. Martinez is going to be back. I don't know if J.D. Martinez has much left. I don't know on the back end what's wrong with him. I suspect there may be some health issues. I don't know if he fits on this roster. And he basically left it as, well, they'll call me and tell me what they want to do. I'm not going to chase him. He's made his money. And he won't be here when they win it all. But he'll go down as a key figure in this transition to a better time because I think it was his, hey, guys, we stink. That's what everyone thinks. So if we're going to stink, let's have some fun doing it. And I've never seen somebody embrace or challenge the New York cauldron in that manner. It's not a way I would do it. I don't think we may ever see it again. And I don't know how effective it would have been in the long range if they didn't have that immediate winning streak and get themselves back into it. And maybe they got fortunate that early on the wild card stuck around for them. Yeah, the Padres won mid-90s games, but they didn't play like that early on. Would have been a lot easier if these teams had played hot early on and put the Mets in a deeper wild card hole to just sell off, but they didn't. Things transpired in a way where the Mets seized the opportunity. Now, it's about going forward because you want to continue the vibes. You want to continue to have good chemistry, but don't be fooled. You cannot bring this team back next year. Same group, every player, which I know a lot of people would love to say today, let's just ride it back opening day and see what happens. Lindor will be healthy. Bring back Pete. The pitchers will now have some innings under their belt. Maybe you have some of the young hitters get incorporated into that, and you sign a couple of component free agents. No, you can't do that with this club. I think you got the most out of this group. And you have to figure out, how do you take the foundation of what they have in there? And there are some core players, and I think, and we'll talk about it more later on, quickly within the next week or so later on, the first question is Pete Alonso and how that's going to transpire. How do you take what you have and then incorporate the right players that take it to the next level without compromising the vibes and the chemistry? Or does this season make it where winning then can create the vibes? Because the expectations now are going to change. Mendoza's already told you that. You don't get a second innocent, like I said, you don't get a second innocent climb. You could have Grimace and OMG and all this other corny stuff. That's the subplot. That's the back end. That's the white noise that gets you through this marathon. But you're not going to get another feel-good story next year. You don't fall 15 games under 500 early next year. And sure, could you come back and do the same thing? Sure. But you think it was negative coming into Stearns' offseason, transition year, and all the anger that they faced up until when they got it turned around in June? Forget about it. You haven't seen anything yet. The fans don't want to go back. The fans don't want to be fed an innocent climb. They had their innocent climb with this Cohen group. They're finally starting to see. It took Cohen a while. He's figuring this thing out. He's starting to build the organization. He was mercenarying it his first couple of years. What else could he do? The only thing he could have done otherwise was to tear it down to the nubs, to the studs, kind of like what Houston and Baltimore and Chicago did. But you can't do that in a town where their brand was teetering because of all the ills and sins of the prior ownership and prior iterations of the Mets. So that's where you're at. And this isn't going to be easy. Look, the Dodgers are a really good team. That's one of the best offenses I've seen in 20-some-odd years. And they weren't even including Freddie Freeman. Peak Freddie Freeman, I can only imagine. There was a reason why they scored over 5 runs a game. There's a reason why they walk more than everybody else in the league. They're patient. They don't chase. There's no soft spots in that lineup. Even a guy like Páez, who's in I don't even know if I'm saying his name right, the bottom of the lineup. I mean, that's a really good prospect. A guy who had almost 20 home runs in the minor leagues. And then they have all these good component players. I mean, don't get mad about Tommy Edmund. He's a good hitter. Maybe he's not a cleanup hitter, and he's certainly not the kind of hitter that you expect to have the series that he had, but he's a good hitter. He was an annoying, very solid hitter in St. Louis. Kiki Hernandez, look, he was terrorizing the Mets 10 years ago in 2015. He's been there forever. I know he took a pit stop in Boston, but he's been there forever. Up and up and down that lineup. And even with the fact that they're not set up with Glasnow being hurt and no Kershaw, they weren't set up starting pitching-wise, and they overused the bullpen. They found guys in the bullpen. Guys, you know, you hear about some of these guys, they have 70 RAs in low A, and all of a sudden they're getting big outs, spinning the ball at an elite rate in the National League Championship Series. Give them credit. They figured this stuff out. The things that they did to get to this point, Mets need to learn from. The Dodgers aren't going anywhere. You may be in the middle of their, I mean, right in the smack, Betts, smack in the prime. Otani, smack in the prime. I'm sure, and I don't have their prospect list in front of me, they're going to have guys joining the party. They got money. I could see them incorporating Blake Snell into the group next year. All of a sudden, they got this guy who has been a little up and down in his career. I bet you he goes there and he becomes Sandy Koufax. And then they got him and Ohtani back in the rotation and Yamamoto a year under their belt. And maybe they bring back Walker Buehler post Tommy John on a pillow contract. And all of a sudden, you look at their rotation like, wow, now they got a good rotation. You know they're going to have a good bullpen. The offense isn't going anywhere. Maybe they are the 96 Bulls. Maybe you're seeing the baseball version of the Bulls. Because I don't think the Yankees stand a chance. I think the Yankees story is largely been built. Give Juan Soto credit, no doubt. Largely been built by just having a good field. By having a good draw. No different than the NCAA tournament. Nobody in the American League really was able to, after the Yankees made their deadline moves, step up to the plate and show that they could compete with them. They were even. I don't think Kansas City or Cleveland was significantly worse than the Yankees. I mean, they were right there. This ain't Kansas City. This ain't Cleveland. And neither would the Mets have been. Now, I think it would have been because the Mets, at where they're at, how burnt out they were, some of the deficits in their bullpen, and so on and so forth, it would have been a closer match with the Subway Series. I think the Dodgers win it in 5 or 6. I don't particularly think it'll be close. Maybe the Yankees are a little bit better positioned with their starting pitching, particularly with the rest, and they definitely have a better bullpen. So there is going to be a little bit of a competitive piece that they have that the Mets don't, but I don't think it's particularly close. I think the Dodgers are going to win a championship, but I think the question now will be, and the Mets are square in the center of this because they're getting in their way, potentially, to a pennant, is how can you be them? First, you got to figure out how can you get back in the tournament. And not get back in the tournament where maybe, like this year, let's face it, a lot of comeback wins, a lot of one-run wins. Those are things that may not always happen. So this Mets team that won 89 games could have easily won 81, 82 games. They could have swung it. Now, you could have said, all right, maybe they could have won 95 with some better season from Diaz. But there's a lot of ifs there. You got to get to the point with that roster where probabilistically, their floor is 89 to 90 wins, and maybe with everything breaking, they could get to 95. You win 90-plus games every year, you're going to be in the postseason every year. And if you're not, that's a huge anomaly. That's how the Dodgers do it. That's how the Yankees have done it for a billion years. That's how the Cardinals have done it at times. Doesn't matter. Forget the division. Forget how National League East is going to be tough. Braves are going to be healthy and back. The Phillies aren't going anywhere. The Nats are rebuilding and starting to get on the other side of the hill on the rebuild. Maybe they spend some money. Miami's always had good pitching. I don't think they could get their stuff together, but for a last place second division club, anytime you go into that mausoleum, those pitchers could shut you down and give you a rough weekend. So it's not going to get any easier. Stearns needs to take these vibes and then figure out how he's going to go forward. And there's going to be some tough decisions because Sandy Alderson was very prescient in what he said when he came back and started the transition to where they are now with Cohen. When you have the kind of money that the Mets have, you could buy anybody you want. That doesn't always mean it's the right thing. There's going to be a situation like Carlos Correa a couple of years ago where it's sitting on a tee and the temptation is just, it's only money. But as Cohen has learned, that money becomes bad money and dead money and will hamper and impact your ability to build a roster if it's not spent correctly. And then there's going to be the pressure from the media and the fans about, you know, all these unsexy moves like Iglesias and Torrens and Manaea and Severino that really weren't exciting in the offseason. These are moves that he's probably going to continue to make. Now, making those moves are important in going forward and finding those assets because it's expensive to field a roster, especially as you still have some uncertainty about your pipeline. So they're important, but the demand this winter is sign a big name. And I'm not saying it's going to be Soto, and it may not be any of the big pitchers. Who knows? Sign a big name. And if they don't, the criticism is going to rain down. Over 1 million fans across 33 states got in the game last year by making picks on Underdog. Went up to 1,000 times your money just by choosing higher or lower on your favorite player stats like strikeouts, total bases, and home runs. I know the National League Championship Series is over, but the World Series is just about to start. Why not pick the higher on Aaron Judge with the home runs? Or Shohei Ohtani? Why don't you pick the lower on some of the Dodgers pitchers who were struggling a little bit this past series? Underdog is super easy to play, and it's even easier to get started. Go to their easy-to-use mobile app or go to underdogfantasy.com. Sign up with promo code TALKING, T-A-L-K-I-N-G. There's a G on this one. And Underdog will give you a mystery special pick to use on your first pick'em entry, plus a first-time deposit offer of up to $1,000 in bonus cash. That's Underdog Fantasy, promo code TALKING, T-A-L-K-I-N-G, to claim your new customer special of a mystery player pick and your deposit offer. Must be 18 or older, 19 or older in Alabama, Nebraska, 19 or older in Colorado for some games, 21 and over in Massachusetts and Arizona, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Void in Colorado. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP, 1-800-639-8783, or text NEXTSTEP to 53342. In New York, call the 24/7 Hope line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. I play Underdog Fantasy. Why don't you? So enjoy what happened this season. It was fun. You saw the rebirth of an organization under a new owner, a new president of baseball operations, and a new manager. You could not have asked a year ago at this time. Buck is fired. Stearns was just getting involved. He had to. Billy Epler was fired because of an off-the-field thing with the whole injured list situation. They were a mess a year ago. And you kept saying to yourself, it doesn't end. Cohen's money hasn't changed the carousel. And in 12 short months, they've taken all that and they were 2 wins away from a pennant and 6 wins away from a championship. There is no world. If I had told you last year at this time, sign up to be down 3-2 to the Dodgers, despite all the challenges, there's no chance you'd believe that that's possible, and you would have signed that deal, because I would have. What I was expecting this year is, hey, build the foundation, compete for a wild card, maybe sneak in, best case scenario, but there's no run here. There's not enough here for a run. And they went into Milwaukee and they beat a good Milwaukee bullpen. And they took a Phillies team that won a pennant a couple of years ago and really right now is in the midst and in the heart of their Harper, Schwarber, Turner, Wheeler, Nola run, those core players that they have. I mean, the Braves, I mean, just a few months ago in April when they went to Atlanta, I'm like, how? The Braves actually offense looked like what the Dodgers offense was like. Geez, I don't know how you're going to get these guys out. They hit the ball hard all the time. There's not a soft spot in the lineup. They don't chase. So it could, you know, this is an amazing run, but they earned it. It's not like it was just miracles and put away all the funny stuff about OMG and Grimace and all that stuff. It's more than that. You saw an organization that took what was in front of them and maximized it to the best of their ability. And what you are learning with the Yankees getting into the postseason, the Yankees are probably, next to Colorado and Arizona, one of the weaker pennant-winning teams I've seen in a while. Because they've got a lot of, like those bullpen arms that are performing, who knows what, those are not bullpen arms you could expect normally. This is not Mariano and Stanton and Nelson. Other than Judge and Soto, there's other guys in the lineup I'm not so sure could sustain any kind of success. And that includes Stanton. Well, I'm not so sure. You know, he's a streaky guy. He gets on a streak. He's tough. So it's a tournament. You're seeing it's a tournament. That's the lesson. Every year you get in a tournament, you have a shot at winning. Look at the Dodgers. A couple of pennants. The BS short COVID season World Series. But so many disappointments. So many. They win 110 games a couple of years ago. When the Yankees were winning 114 games, that was a dream season. You could not lose. It would have been a disaster to lose. In tournament baseball, it doesn't matter. In a lot of ways, and maybe that'll be something that'll bridge the gap for us, some conversation. I think that there's a hard look at taking it, that now that it's a tournament sport, I think you have to embrace it and make some changes. But again, that's another story for another day. Because right now, it's about soaking in the good, the bad, and the hurt and really putting in perspective where we're at. A lot of fun what happened. A lot of heartbreak and disappointment. They were beat by a better team. One of the best offenses I've seen. I don't think the Mets, well, let's put it, if you took the Phillies starting pitching, forget the Phillies bullpen, and put it on the Mets, I think it would have been a different type of game that they would have had to play. Maybe they would have been able to go a little bit deeper. Maybe they would have navigate those lineups twice instead of once. But I think the result would have been the same. Those guys were on point. On point. And the one thing that I think they really have to have an honest conversation with themselves, because quite honestly, if you told me at the beginning of the year that only the 121-loss White Sox and 99-loss Angels would have more walks as a pitching staff than the Mets, I'd say, oh, wow, this is going to be an ugly season. The fact that they were able to navigate that is amazing. Now, there have been other teams that have walked a high level of batters and made the postseason, but the Mets are up there at the zenith. At the red, at, you know, if you had the red line, the Mets are hugging that red line. They probably have gone over, and now they were exposed in this series. That's a much different conversation. Much different conversation. Because fixing that in today's baseball is tough. I don't know if it's the type of pitches they throw, the approach. Were they afraid of the Dodgers? Were they burnt out? Game calling? I don't know. That's something they have to think about, because there's no way, and I will stand by this statement, I'll be shocked if they are in the same position walking a top five team in baseball in walks next year. They ain't sniffing a postseason spot. I don't care who's, I don't care if there's Soto on the roster, Burns, I don't care. They're not sniffing a postseason spot. So that's really where we're at this morning. The sun has finally come up. I started, it was still dark out. The sun has finally come up. It is the birth of the Mets off season. It's pretty ironic. You start hours after the end of the game in the Twitter spaces. It's almost like I never went to bed. And then now the sun's up and it's a new time of the year. Fall has officially begun in the baseball fans' vernacular. Basketball starts tomorrow. So I switched my Mets hat to a Knicks hat. Not that I do any media on that, but that's where I become just a fan at that point. And the offseason is upon us. Maybe the baseball season isn't over. The World Series will be starting in a few days, but the offseason is upon us. What's next? So I am going to take a couple of days off. From the newsletter, from the podcasting, I need a couple of days off. I need some rest. What's ironic is that you forget, because it's been a while since the Mets went on a deeper run how late and how intense and how draining this is, and how your whole life kind of has to work around this postseason schedule. When you do what I do and then add in the postgame shows that sometimes go late because the games are late, and thank God for the pitch clock, because these would have been five-hour games with the way the Dodgers work counts if they weren't. You kind of need to catch up on sleep. The other day I was looking in the mirror. I'm like, wow, I got bags under my eyes. And I'm like, you know, need some rest. And, well, not the rest I wanted now. I wanted a couple of weeks from now. But there you go. So I need some rest. I need to recalibrate. And there's been a tremendous amount of growth of this program. The newsletter, which was just spawned about a year ago around this time, has grown. I have to find ways to continue to keep it fresh and to continue to give you the value that your hard-earned dollar, for those who subscribe, demands. So I think at the very least, the rest of the week will be podcast free. I'm sure Stearns will have some kind of post-season wrap-up. We'll see what that brings. There will be content, but give it a few days. It probably more towards the weekend. And I need to marinate and think about myself. Okay, how are we going to handle the offseason? Because really, the whole program has been, since the Atlanta series, audio, video, post-game spaces, and very little writing, because it wasn't the time for long form or even thoughtful columns. It was about reaction, conversation about the moment, about the postseason, and that stuff goes stale. So a lot to come. I want to say this. I want to thank you for spending the season with me. Over the years, and this year, I got to actually hear from some guys in the spaces I haven't really met. And maybe, you know, there's always Mets events. There's a possibility that we'll meet in person. But, you know, I've shared, you know, dogs I've lost on the air with you guys over the years, and I felt, you know, comfortable enough to kind of occasionally let you in personally. And I had mentioned earlier that this whole Mets thing sometimes is a way to meet people through a hobby that, you know, become friends. And I can't say I'm friends with all of you because we don't know each other, but I do appreciate the support. I said this during the Twitter Spaces last night. I don't take lightly the fact that you spend a minute of your time listening to me, because you can't get that back. I always say you could click on an article and get out of it, and your life doesn't really change if it's a bad article. Maybe 3 minutes of your life is lost. It's still 3 minutes, but it's not like, wow, I just took 45 minutes of my time and that was awful. Like, that would piss me off if I were you. And I always take it seriously. I always take the fact that some of you support me with the subscription seriously. I work my hardest to give you value, to give you something that's thought-provoking and honest without clickbaiting you. And even if you don't, I mean, look, the goal and purpose of what I do here is to give everybody, no matter what their level of commitment is, something that they walk away and feel like they got the gold star treatment. And do I do it all the time? No, I know I don't. Is everything perfect? No. You know, you're talking about a one-man band here. You're talking about a business that's clearly a small business. It's funny, everybody, especially during campaign season, talks about small business like it's a cute little pet, but the people that talk about it haven't really done it. And this is, you know, if you want to call it a small business, it's a one-man band, and it's a labor of love. There's a few bucks in it to cover expenses and costs, but ultimately I do it because of last night, because you get to interact during times like post-Mets wins and losses with like-minded people that, you know, just fill you with some good vibes. Let's just use the good vibes form. So I want to thank all of you for another great season. Talking Mets has evolved since the first show right before opening day 2016. It's been nearly killed a couple of times. Those are stories for another day. There's been days throughout, not recently, but throughout this nearly 10 years where you question why you're doing this. It's frustrating. Just like athletes, you have your good days, your bad days. There's some days you bring it and you don't feel you're any good. There's days that you have to drag yourself there. There's days you can't wait to get in front of the mic. Look, there are some days in the summer after the Mets are on a 4 or 5 game losing streak that you get in front of this mic. It's Sunday night. It's nice out. I just want to sit by the deck and enjoy an evening with my family, and you know, you got to do this. And it's easy to say, well, I'll just skip this week because nobody cares. Well, then you're not real. Then you don't get to enjoy this. And the fact that you guys are expecting and have told me you expect and look forward to what I have to say, that's humbling. And that keeps me going. So I want to thank you for that. I know we'll continue to grow. Every time we face that next hill together with this show, we tend to get over it and grow in some way, shape, or form. I'm not SNY. I'm not the New York Post. I might not be a content creator that could get 40,000 people to watch me stream watching the game. I'm not Barstool. Those guys are good at what they do, and God bless them. I don't have any ill will. I do the thing the way I do it. Maybe it's a little more niche-y. Maybe it's a little bit more old school. I like it this way, and we'll grow together. But hopefully, you know, more good days to come. So I want to thank everybody for a great season. I want to thank you for spending time on the product in whatever way possible. I want to thank you if you tuned into the Twitter Spaces. And I want to thank you if you gave me good feedback, bad feedback. You know, I get plenty of criticism, and some of it's well-earned. This has been a transition year for me, too, incorporating other things into the show, not just a weekly podcast. I figured out some things. I've learned some things. I've learned from you. I hope you've learned from me. And I just wanted to end it off like I normally do at this time of the year, just saying, hey, thanks. Thanks so much for patronizing me with some of your time, which you don't ever get back. So that's that. Again, these are so hard to do, these reaction shows, because I'm not here to tell you what happened last night. doesn't matter. You can read the box score. I'm not going to even get into the nuts and bolts of the game of this was more about going forward in reaction to what this season means. So anyway, rest up. We'll be back soon. Trust me, I'm not going anywhere. I just need to recharge the batteries for a few days, taking a look at the schedule, the assessment of what's next, and figure it out, and we'll be doing that together. Of course, you can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. NoG, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy your week. Taking a little time off, but we'll be back with more Talking Mets content very soon. Till then, take care, everybody.